Halfway through. That went quick. Lots of your posts on Facebook that I haven't even gotten to yet, as well as your tweets. The memorable, the inspirational, unforgettable milestones or moments in sports that you are so thrilled you had a chance to witness. And people ask me this question a lot. What's the coolest moment in person? But I don't even need you to have seen it in person. When I say milestone, I'm referring to what we're watching with Albert Pujols. Now, even closer to home run number 700. And I hope that baseball and sports is all in on it. But there have been many of those milestones over the last 20 years. And I always think like, oh, I'll never forget this. And then, of course, I do. They all blend together. And so even as you are responding on both Twitter, A-Law Radio, and on Facebook, you're giving me a taste of some of these moments that I was sure that I would never forget. And then many more that I did not see. Either I was way too young or I wasn't here yet, one or the other. And so this is kind of cool. Thank you for sharing them with me. Memorable, unforgettable milestones in sports that you are thrilled that you either watched or heard, or maybe you had the chance to experience in person. Our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. Even as we were watching baseball on Monday night, we got Albert Pujols with the only run against the Cubs at Wrigley Field and Jordan Montgomery's first career complete game in a time in baseball when complete games are so rare. He didn't even throw 100 pitches. How about that? He retired at 1.17 in a row. I don't remember what the final number was, but locked in. 4-0 with the Cards and an ERA of 0.35 since he was traded from the Yankees. You can imagine the Yankees are watching and thinking, dope, what did we do? So it was a 1-2 punch for the Cardinals, who have the longest win streak in baseball right now. Now it's 70 wins. We're getting deeper and deeper into the season where there's a greater sense of urgency. The Brewers are able to keep pace. We'll get to that. But I mentioned the Yankees and Brian Cashman reiterating on Monday before the Subway Series that he believes in the Yankees. Now, I don't know what else he would say. This is before the team went out and doubled up the Mets 4-2, got another Aaron Judge home run. But Cashman says, I believe strongly in them. This is after he got booed at Yankee Stadium. And certainly Yankees fans have not only taken aim at Cashman, the general manager, but also the manager, Aaron Boone, who, okay, at times people describe him as a puppet. There's even some question about whether or not he makes out his own lineup on a day-to-day basis. To have their struggles be such a major letdown because people were buying into, hey, this team could be the greatest Yankee team we've ever seen. When they set the standard and they came out in the first half on a historic pace. But there's a reason why it was historic, because it's really tough to do. So coming back to earth a little bit, but yeah, the moves they made at the trade deadline outside of Andrew Benintendi at this point aren't working. Think about if they could switch Jordan Montgomery for the right-hander they traded for, which was Frankie Montas. His ERA is somewhere up near 9. Even that would make a difference in a couple of wins. And so Brian Cashman is having to defend himself, but less himself than he is defending the Yankees. And this comes amidst them losing, was it 20 of their last 31 games?
I know Booney, you know, a part of his preseason speech and spring training address is you know, the group is saying, hey, that adversity is going to come at some point. It's going to come, and you know, we're going to have to deal with it, and how you deal with it is just as important as dealing with it. This has been a tough stretch, and you know, we've certainly taken it seriously, and but the group's got my belief. I believe strongly in them. I think they're still capable of everything we ever hoped and dreamed, and you know, but we have to weather the storm first and foremost.
Brian Cashman points to adversity, and I've said this too. I don't really think the Yankees are in danger of losing the American League East, though Aaron Boone said on Sunday, I think it was, that he believes the division is still up for grabs. I don't know that I'm on board with that. But the fact that they really weren't pushed and didn't face a ton of adversity in the first half of the season, to me, means they were not quite as ready for a playoff run. Now, as they scuffle and struggle and limp through August and watch the Astros overtake them for best record in the American League, watch the Mets pass them in the New York Metro, a better record. Well, now, as that gap between them and the Rays or them and the Jays get smaller, by the way, the Rays have won 8 of their last 10 and 3 in a row. Well, now you see what the Yankees are made of and what kind of leadership they have. We talk about winning, how it covers up a multitude of sins. Essentially, it covers up personality conflicts. It tends to make everyone get along, or at least they tolerate one another a little better. It smooths out the rough edges. It means that guys are happier to come to work, happy to go through the grind. Winning is contagious. Everyone wants to be a part of it. Athletes tend to complain less about playing time or how they're used or where they're used or the decisions their managers or coaches make if the team is winning, for the most part. Now, you always have some athletes who care more about their own individual success than the team. But when the team is winning, a lot of times that is subverted. Individual goals, individual aspirations, individual contracts. But when you're losing, the warts are exposed, the cracks in the dam. A little more water is coming through. So here are the Yankees. At 75 wins, it's been a rough post-All-Star break for them. But can they fight through the adversity and show us that they do have the heart and the mettle to be a champion? Guess that storyline is as yet unwritten. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Let's see. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. I was debating whether or not I was going to bring this up because it grosses me out so much that I can't really even think about it without wanting to upchuck. But you all may have seen the video that went viral on social media during the Yankees-Mets game, in which a man, I can't think about it without feeling my stomach go all wonky. I do not eat hot dogs for one reason. You don't know what's in them. I know how hot dogs are made, and it makes me not want to eat them. Now, I do eat sausages, so I guess that makes me a hypocrite. But for whatever reason, I can't eat hot dogs. And haven't for a long time. This fan at the Yankees game was caught on video. I guess it's his thing. I don't know his name. I don't want to know his name. In fact, I'm not joking. I can barely tell you about it without wanting to throw up. He used a straw, shoved it down the middle of his hot dog. So he takes the hot dog out of the bun. He shoves the straw down the middle of the hot dog. He pulls the straw out of the hot dog, leaving a straw-sized cylinder, a space in the middle of his hot dog. He then sucks the hot dog pieces out of the straw, which is,
oh my gosh,
Seriously, I'm not joking. I don't think I can get through this without really wanting to throw up. If you all didn't see our Chubby Bunny World Championship, I have a very strong gag reflex, which means I don't do well in those types of contests. Sometimes just when I'm brushing my teeth, my gag reflex kicks in. I get that from my mom. I just remember every time I was a kid, when she would brush her teeth, there'd be a gag in there. Like, Mom, what are you doing? I was out long before. Sean Morash. Anyway, back to Hot Dog Guy. So Hot Dog Guy then uses the hot dog with the cylinder taken out of the middle, with the straw essentially taken out of the middle, to suck down his, was it a beer that he was drinking?
Yes, it was a beer.
To suck down his beer. So he's using the hot dog as a straw.
No!
And not.
No!
Disgusting and disturbing. Not to mention, it went viral. So we're not retweeting it. That's an order. We are not retweeting it. I will lock you out of our Twitter account, so don't even think about it. Absolutely viral all over the damn place. Somebody caught him on video. I can't even imagine being that guy, and you don't even care.
I immediately regret this decision.
But Jay, did you tell me that someone put on social or put on the internet that this is actually what he does a lot, that he's done this before?
Yeah, apparently.
Maybe he's attempting to be famous. Maybe this is his shtick.
Oh, he made it. All right.
But well, I don't know. I don't know his name.
I don't know. They always say there's no bad publicity. I'd say this is pretty bad publicity.
What's he going to do? Set up a YouTube channel of him making straws out of hot dogs? And
no.
Yeah.
Because he'd have a following, probably.
My point is, how do you get famous on this? I mean, I don't even know his name.
I mean, I'm sure if you looked it up, we could probably, we'll know his name tomorrow, I would say. Or like.
Okay. I'm not famous, have zero desire to be famous, but there are bazillions of other things that I would rather be famous for.
Almost
I would say
anything.
Infamous, not famous.
No, he's infamous is absolutely right. Yeah, so there was this, I saw this thread on one of the Twitter videos that was going around, and it was apparently someone who used to work with this man. Like, I don't know where there was.
I'm not kidding, I'm going to throw up.
Yeah, so he says, In the thread, this guy who says he worked with the hot dog guys was sending a text to his friend. He goes, I know this guy. He works in the same office as me. He actually does this all the time, and no one sits with him at lunch. So he says that the man drinks his tea at work with a hot dog straw because he, quote, this is just what I'm reading, likes the, what was it, the salt and the fat from the hot dog. Compliment the beverage is what this man who eats the hot dog, that's why he does it. Yeah, if that makes it better.
There are some beverages that go well with particular foods. For instance, when you have fast food, and this is just in my mind because I went after whitewater rafting on Saturday, and just there was a delay getting out of there because we were waiting on the other rafts, and I didn't have my car keys. Oh, I couldn't get to my car anyway. I was so ravenous on the way home that I couldn't drive all the way home without eating. I had eaten my lunch at 11:30 and it's now 9 o'clock at night and I'm so hungry. So I stop at Wendy's. Mom gave me a gift card because she's the best. I stop at Wendy's on my way home and I initially was just going to get a burger and some fries. Not going to get a drink. I had some water or something. Oh, actually, I had some coffee. I had stopped and gotten coffee, too. And she says to me, for 17 more cents, you can have chicken nuggets and a drink. I'm like, okay.
Impeccable.
I scarfed all that food within 10 minutes, and it tasted so good with my Coke. There are some foods that taste better with particular beverages. Some of you, maybe you like your ballpark food with beer. My family makes fun of me because I eat pizza with milk. I know, but it's delicious. I don't eat it through a straw, though. Anyway, that's just the part that's disgusting. So I get feeling like there are foods and beverages that make a perfect combo, but not together at the same time through a food straw. That is so, so gross. It's worse. I even said this to Jay earlier, so I'll say it on the air now. If you did not watch our latest Stairway to Seven video featuring the junk in Jay's trunk, well, then you missed the fact that he keeps a pillow in his trunk as if he might use it with boots and dirt and skateboards and everything else that's in his trunk. Well, we don't want to be giving away everything that's in your trunk because that's the point of the video is there's junk in his trunk. There's also a few strange items in Princess Leia's hatchback, but I don't feel like she's junky. Anyway, both Princess Leia and Jasmine, that's Jay's car, make an appearance.
Unofficially.
They make cameos in this video on our YouTube channel. It's great. You actually should watch it. It's really funny. Because when I figure out that there is a pillow and actually a blanket in Jay's trunk and that it's been in there for how many months?
I guess like three.
No, you told me longer than that.
Well, I've only had the car since March, so.
Well, then it's been longer than that. Anyway, he keeps a pillow and doesn't change the pillowcase or keep a clean pillowcase in his trunk just in case he needs to sleep in his car or sleep somewhere and he can't get home, which I appreciate the idea. I get it. I have a blanket in the back of my car, too, in case I ever have to sleep in my car, get stranded somewhere, especially in the wintertime. But he keeps the pillow in the trunk with no clean pillowcase. And I am so grossed out. It's not clean. It's been in there for how many months?
Like three. Going on, I don't know, five.
Okay. It's not clean, Jay. You have other...
It's not dirty.
Yes, it is. It's okay. It's not fresh. It's not clean. I wouldn't put my head on it. And I actually said to him earlier that I would rather put my head on his nasty pillowcase than to eat, drink, I don't know what we call it, sip out of a hot dog straw. Gross, given the...
That's saying a lot.
Given the choice. So I went over to have dinner with a friend of mine from my church small group, and her husband was out of town, and she had her 10-year-old son, who is one of my favorite kids in my class at church. Jackson loves me because he knows I can talk about baseball with him. And so he had filled this jar. I'm not kidding. He'd filled this jar with questions for the game Would You Rather. And true 10-year-old boy fashion, some of his questions are, would you rather eat a chipmunk or a squirrel? Like, Jackson, we're eating dinner. Well, I feel like I'd rather eat a chipmunk because squirrels are poisonous. I was like, okay. So that was one of his would you rather questions. Would you rather eat a chipmunk or a squirrel? Another question was, would you rather eat raw chicken or raw turkey? I think, I'm like, Jackson, what? Those can kill you.
So he
was very proud of himself. Another one was, would you rather have a pet shark or a pet killer whale?
I like that one.
I went with killer whale because at least they can be trained. I don't know if you can train a shark.
No, you can't domesticate those.
Yeah, and there was another one too. Would you rather be Jacob DeGrom or Pete Alonso? He's desperate to go to see his first Mets game ever. So that was also a good conversation. Anyway, really cute kid. One of my favorite kids in class at church on Sundays. So seeing him at his home and having dinner with him, well, that was a totally different experience. But he really liked my cookies, too, which is just the first step to a beautiful relationship. So sweet kid going into fourth grade because school is getting ready to start. All right. On Twitter, that whole last 5 minutes just took a drastic turn more than once. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page, too, we're asking you what memorable, unforgettable sports milestones or memories, I guess memory and memorable, or moments. We'll go with moments. Milestones or moments. You know how much I love alliteration. Have you witnessed either in person or just you're thrilled as a sports fan that you are around to see it? 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast. You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You're up next on After Hours.
Love the show, Amy. I really do miss you on the weekend, so I never get to hear you on Saturday or Sunday.
I hate to tell you, but I just can't work 7 days a week. But thank you.
Hey, Amy, I love the show. You can talk hoops 365.
Thanks, Angelo.
Love your show. You're the best.
Thank you, Angel.
You are a superhero of the sports world.
If you would like to yell and scream at the voice of reason, fine with me. Ready, aim, fire. This girl's tougher than she looks. I'm
Amy's taking your calls at 855-212-4CBS.
What is the most memorable, unforgettable sports milestone or moment that you've witnessed in your lifetime, whether in person or on TV / on the radio? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Do you know how that I recognize and am fully cognizant that it's nearly football season? It's not just that we've got more QB news or there's an actual countdown or my last days off are coming. My last days off until Thanksgiving, if I even take Thanksgiving off. Not sure yet. We've got games on Black Friday this year. I told you, did I tell you, if you listened to us during the 2020 season, when the NFL played on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday, I told you the league is not giving up that real estate. The NFL will find a way to play on every last day of the week within years. It's happening. We're now about to get the first official Friday games outside of a pandemic, plus Christmas Day games. The NFL has got urban sprawl. And once they dominate another day or dominate another holiday or dominate another offseason, they just don't want to give up that real estate. So it's happening. But
it's time to have some fun.
Here's another way that I know it's time for football. Are you ready? You tell me if this resonates with you at all. Celebrate Pork Rind Appreciation Day this football season with the bacony crunch of Southern Recipe Pork Rinds. Get a low-carb, protein-packed pork rind snack that's as tasty out of the bag as it is in your favorite. Is it keto? Keto. Clearly, that's not part of my diet. Keto-friendly recipe. Find your rind at southernrecipe.com. Does that sound familiar? It should, because it's now time for me to voice and record some brand new Southern Recipe pork rinds ads. And then, of course, that makes Kurt Warner jealous, which is just fine with me. We got to have to get him on the show again this year. Let's see. 855-212-4227. Edward is in Detroit. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
Talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, sir.
My favorite is Barry Sanders, 2,000 yards.
Yeah, do you remember when it was?
I want to say 97, 98, somewhere in there.
All right, I'm going to look. I actually don't know. But yes, Barry Sanders, gone too soon. Well, gone from the football field too soon. Yeah. I do remember the shocker of him retiring when he did. That sent literal shockwaves through the football world.
I know, it was very disappointing. But, you know,
my dad!
He walked away with his knees, so I can't say anything wrong with that.
That's true. It was 1997. Look at you.
Okay, was that the game that Reggie Brown broke his neck?
I don't know. I'd have to do a little research.
Because I remember it was a terrible moment, but it was an awesome moment at the same time. I think it was the same game.
The third 2,000-yard season in 1997, rushing for 2,053 yards. And that was at 29 years old. He wasn't a spring chicken.
No, he wasn't. And he could have broke the record, but he just walked home with his knees.
So let's see. The title of this particular column that I clicked on, that it Googled and popped up, from the Detroit Vintage Detroit collection. Let's see. It says triumph and tragedy the day Barry reached the 2,000 yard mark. So maybe that's what it's referring to.
I think it was. I think they both happened on the same day.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Second year linebacker Reggie Brown, who lay motionless on the turf. Wow.
Yes. And they took him out of the stretcher and barely got 2,000 yards.
Yeah, but the 300-pound body of offensive lineman Lamont Burns crashed into Reggie's helmet, jarring his neck.
Yes.
Oh, man, that's scary. But that yes.
was quite the game. I wasn't there, but I saw it on TV.
Wow. All and right. That is certainly memorable.
It was very memorable. I remember it.
I'll agree with you there. Okay, sir. Thank you for that memory. But yes, 1997, you nailed it.
Yep. Thank you, Amy. Have a good night.
Thank you, Edward. Let's go to Pocky, who's in San Diego. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy. How you doing?
I'm good.
So my memorable moment, I actually have two. My first one is, I believe it was Monday Night Football 2003. Brett Favre playing right after his father died.
Yes.
I mean, that freaking game right there, man, made me cry, dude. Like, I that game was so emotional.
It was. I remember it was Monday Night Football, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And he obviously was very emotional himself and chose to play because he was sure that his father would want him to. And then he went out and he performed, I mean, so well. It was one of the best games of his career.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to go back and look. Do you remember what year that was?
I think it was 2003.
It was. It was late December 2003. And it was, well, it's a legendary Monday Night Football game now. But it was the day after his father died. And not only did Green Bay have a 31-7 lead at halftime, but in the first half, he threw two touchdown passes in the first quarter, then in the second quarter, and threw for 311 yards before halftime.
Yeah. And then not only that, like, they always talk about people who play football with heart, but I don't think anybody played with more heart than Brett Favre in that game, honestly.
Yeah, he wore that heart on his sleeve or outside of his chest for everyone to see as well.
And then my second one is when LaDainian Tomlinson broke the touchdown record.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one that's special for me because I'm a diehard Chargers fan. I'm not even from San Diego. I moved out here and I kind of adopted the team, and then they left, so that was kind of hard. But
ouch!
You know, I always say this though, like, you know, there's a lot of Chargers fans from San Diego. They kind of like left the team because they went to L.A. But I've always said it doesn't matter where your team goes. If that's your team, that's your team. You, a true diehard doesn't drop the team just because they leave the city. So,
although that is painful, it might take a little adjustment. I can imagine there's some Raiders fans who are feeling the same.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, but we don't care about the Raiders, though.
Oh, okay. So we don't. But I just thought it maybe a little empathy. Make you a better person there, Hockey. Oh, all right. Well, those are good memories.
That's my biggest rival, though, so I got to send shots at the Raiders. That's my biggest rival. So,
all right, sir. Well, thank you for listening in San Diego. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am.
855-212-4227. On Facebook, Karen says, in 2004, the Red Sox down 3-0, but still won the American League pennant against the Yankees, winning 4 in a row and then going on to St. Louis to finally break the curse. Yes, the 86-year-old curse and the World Series win in 2004. Michael says, being a fan of Cleveland sports, I've witnessed some memorable moments. The drive, Browns letting the AFC championship slip away. I don't know if it slipped away so much as John Elway just took it. The fumble, Browns dropped the ball in a consecutive AFC championship. The shot, Cavs failed to stop Jordan in the opening playoff round, but this is the beginning of the Bulls' dominance for the next decade. And he goes on and on and on talking about the franchise quarterbacks since the reboot. Let's see. And then we have been a champion in this time frame, the Cavs and LeBron, their historic comeback against the Warriors, but only after watching LeBron take his talents to Miami for his first two titles. Oh, yeah. James Patterson says, Kirk Gibson going yard in the World Series. And, you know, it's actually Kirk, not Kurt. Kirk Gibson going yard. That was the Dodgers. It was 1988. And we played that moment over and over when we were commemorating Vin Scully and his life and his career a few weeks ago. Wendy on Facebook, Cal Ripken's last game at Oriole Park and his induction into the Hall of Fame. Daniel, the Jaguars going into Denver in 96 as a 14.5 point underdog, beating John Elway and the Broncos in the playoffs in just their second year of existence. Oh, I remember that well. Chris says, as a kid watching Hammer and Hank hit his historic home run. And then let's see, Ben went to the World Series with Cincinnati facing Oakland in 1990, game one. Eric Davis had a two-run homer early on to beat Dave Stewart. And so lots of you coming up with all kinds of incredible moments and milestones. Matt at the game when Steve Yzerman scored his 500th goal for the Red Wings against the Avalanche. On Facebook, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. We'll get back to your calls as well. Albert Pujols is closing in on another one of those moments that we will remember forever.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
1988, I remember watching that moment live with my family. Kirk Gibson with the walk-off home run on one leg, and the story that Vin Scully tells over and over after he called that moment is that he was talking about how Kirk Gibson couldn't stand up and didn't have a bat and was nowhere to be found, and he grabs one and he comes out and he hits that walk off, and as he limps around the bases, he does that epic fist pump. Really amazing moment. I do remember that one live. What is a memorable, unforgettable sports milestone? Really, it's about milestones, but many of you are sharing moments with us that you are so thrilled you got to see yourself. And I don't necessarily mean in person. There are lots of these moments that we witness on TV. I can tell you another one. After how many years? Let me look it up first before I tell you the moment, because I can remember exactly what I was doing, how I was reacting, but I need to know how many years it was since we'd seen that same sports feat and why it was so iconic to me. I'd always wanted to see it. So we'll get to that. But back to your phones here, 855-212-4227. Mr. Z is in Massachusetts. What's yours?
Hi, Amy. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thank you.
Or this morning.
Yes, whichever.
Whichever. So I've got two. One's a milestone, and one's just a memorable moment. And they both happen to have this be part of the same guy's career. So we're talking about Mr. Raymond Bourque,
mm-hmm.
Boston Bruins. I do believe it was in '87 when the Bruins decided to retire Phil Esposito's number 7. Which Ray Bourque was wearing. Ray Bourque came out of onto the ice, peeled off the number 7 to reveal 77.
Aww.
That's a great memorable moment.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Oh my God! If you could ever see it, because it's like the garden went crazy.
I can imagine.
It was just. And then the milestone was also with Ray Bourque, although it wasn't with the Boston Bruins. It was with the Colorado Avalanche.
Sure. Player.
He raised the Stanley Cup up over his head.
Yeah.
That was just an awesome thing. He was just wearing the wrong uniform.
I think the Bruins did him a favor. The Bruins weren't going to win a title. So to have him go to the Avalanche, and of course, I remember that moment, and him
that was great, man. He got to retire on top.
That was awesome.
Hey, thanks for letting me talk.
Thank you, sir.
Day.
Good to talk to you. Have a great Tuesday. 855-212-4227. Steve is in Alabama. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, Amy. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Thank you.
It's not really a milestone, but it involves one Kirk Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
And this was back in the summer of 1983, and he played for the Tigers.
Okay.
June 14th. And this is the only time I've ever seen this in my lifetime, but he hit a home run outside of Tiger Stadium that went 523 feet. and the ball ended up landing in the lumber yard across the street from the Tiger Stadium.
That's so cool. They found it?
They found the ball.
That's awesome. I can imagine there was a mad search for it, a frenzied search.
I don't know. And like I said, in my lifetime, the only other person that I've seen or heard that hit one out of the park was Reggie Jackson, and that was back in the early 70s, and I was only probably a couple years old then.
That's really neat. I had not ever heard of that before.
I'm sure you can Google Kirk Gibson's home runs, and it'd pop up. I remember that like back in my hand because it was the following year that him and the Detroit Tigers went to the World Series and beat the Padres. And that was when I first heard of Vin Scully, because Vin Scully was a announcer for that one of many, many World Series that he's done.
Yeah, 25 of them. Well, that's really cool. I appreciate you sharing that moment. I had no idea. I'll have to look it up.
All right.
Thank
have
you,
Steve.
You too. Mike is listening in Boston. Mike, welcome to After Hours.
Hi. I got two milestones and two memorable moments, so I'll go fast.
Okay.
The first milestone is Steph Curry in the Garden when he broke Reggie Miller's record in front of Reggie Miller.
Oh, very cool. Yes, I remember watching it.
Yeah, and the other milestone was when Devin Booker broke Michael Jordan's Boston Garden record in like a 30-point loss. I don't know if you remember that game. But he put up 72 in Boston Garden, the current record.
Okay.
And the two memorable moments would be, I don't know if you remember when Pedro had started the All-Star game at Fenway Park, and he struck out five of the first six batters after he threw his arm out.
Was that 99?
I snuck into that game on that year. I was like 18 years old.
Wait, is that you snuck into Fenway?
Yeah, I snuck into Fenway, and the crazy thing is, a friend of mine, we went to school together. He had climbed over the wall to get into the game. I snuck in. I snuck in the game. I snuck in through the side door.
Oh my gosh!
Fact.
That's amazing. Yeah. Wait, so that was the same? Just so I remember correctly, that was 99, right? Same game that Ted Williams made the appearance pregame.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. What a scene that was. Yeah.
Well, if you remember the batters that Pedro struck out, the first set, five of the first six, that was probably one of the best pitching exhibitions I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
But last one is Michael Jordan playing with the flu. That was a great moment also. Thank you for taking my call.
I appreciate it, Mike, in Boston. Yeah, those are some phenomenal moments. And actually, one of the reasons that I loved The Last Dance, I know it was during the pandemic and we really didn't have much else going on at the time, but I loved watching The Last Dance because for me it was a walk down memory lane, all those iconic moments that Michael Jordan had not only been in the center of, but really there's a whole generation of sports fans that didn't see them. And so to walk down that road again and to see them all and really recognize what I was watching, because I mean, I wasn't too young, I remember them, but at the time there was no real cognizance of what this would mean in NBA history or in sports history. Yes, just to circle back to 1999 All-Star Game, Ted Williams came out at Fenway Park on a cart. He threw out the first pitch, and then Pedro takes the ball and strikes out the first four batters of the game. First pitcher in history to ever strike out the side to begin an All-Star Game. It was quite a scene at Fenway Park. But how cool is that Mike snuck in? Oh, my God. That's awesome. So my moment, and then we'll let producer Jay share his, my milestone / moment that I will never forget. In my living room, I was a nervous wreck pacing around, and then as it became apparent that American Pharoah would win the Triple Crown in 2015, first one since the 70s, I started crying. I was jumping up and down in my living room. I'll never forget that. I was watching it by myself, but I couldn't even stand to think about watching it with anyone else because it's something I'd wanted to see for so long, and it finally happened, and it wasn't a close race. American Pharoah could have lapped the field, for heaven's sakes, in the Belmont, but the whole place was shaking, apparently, according to people who were there. So I'm so thrilled. And then we saw Justified 3 years later, but American Pharoah was the one that ended the drought in Triple Crown racing. So I love that moment. What about you, Jay?
Mine will be Tony Hawk landing the first ever 900 at the X Games in 1999. He had tried 10 times before that. No one had ever landed a 900 on a vert ramp in skateboarding before. And him doing it, I was really into skateboarding at the time, and just changed the entire sport to what it is now. So that's always one of the most iconic moments to me.
Do you think less of me that I don't know what a 900 is?
It's a lot of spins.
900?
Not 900 spins, no.
Why is it called the 900?
Because when you do one full spin, it's a 360, and then 540, 720.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you could have just said that. Jay definitely thinks less of me. It's all right.
No.
It's good. 1 hour to go. Good morning to you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.